Let me try out something here. Because I think maybe if I serve this to you the right way, I could shift you on the tariff question.
Okay.
So I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about why those things are being implemented, and there's a lot of disingenuous framing because the real story is quite uncomfortable. I think that tariffs and reshoring in general is a product of our competition with China vying for superpower status in the 21st century. So I am in a very different corner of the political spectrum, but I have read all your guys. I appreciate their work. I derive a lot of insights from it. I'm probably one of the few people on the left who has gone that deep into Hayek and Mises and so on and so forth.
Also one of the few on the right. Also on the right. And most people don't read that stuff anyway.
Most people don't. That's the thing, actually, is that most people from any corner do not actually read the books.
For sure.
So yeah. I think it is indisputable that where labor is cheaper, it is, you know, more cost efficient to produce those things elsewhere. But this is not necessarily a rational economic calculation right now. We are contesting, particularly in the South China Sea, we are engaged in some type of a gray war with China. There are things that are questionably legal that our naval vessels are deploying on each other. There's all sorts of, should we call them cyber attacks or cyber, I don't know what. But there's a kind of growing suspicion in the national security sector of each of these superpowers that if this gray war turns into a hot war, all of a sudden, the United States is going to lose its chips, 20% of its energy capacity overnight. And so the cost that they're hedging here is that, you know, if those tensions turn into a hot war at some point, we'll be very glad that we spent all this money to make our wind and solar and chips here at home, because then we don't lose access to them. How do you feel about that version of tariffs?
That's a more interesting version of tariffs than is currently being
It's not being discussed, because I don't think anyone
No.
wants to have a predominant narrative that it is possible that the superpower countries of the 21st century are going to go to war with each other. But that is explicitly, if you trace this back to, I believe the World Economic Forum was producing these reports in like the 2010s, predicting this trend, and it's been going on for quite a while. And people are kind of framing it as like bringing jobs and opportunity back. It might in some specific sectors, but I don't think there's any economic argument you can make for it. There's a very clear national security argument.
I think you can look at a spectrum of what you can do from a national security perspective and instituting various policies. And I think tariffs, which are taxed against Americans and harm Americans more than they harm anybody else, and harm almost every industry that's not directly related to the industry being assisted, is like a real good shoot yourself in the foot type of way to get that national security check green checked. I think there's like nine other policies, many of which I can list offhand, that are just categorically superior to tariffs. Targeted tariffs can be an interesting thing, but I also think that at the same time, while having key military capabilities very much centralized, just in case of emergencies, really good thing. It's also amazing to promote as much trade and interrelationship with enemies as possible so that they don't end up having wars with you.
So this was, because this was the argument that the neoliberals made after the First World War and definitely after the Second, right? The idea was that you could align the global incentives such that France and Germany do not have divergent, they don't have a competition for scarce resources between their capitalist classes, right? So there's no reason for Germany to go to war with France if they're mutually engaged in a prosperous kind of trade. You just link all of these different markets. That is kind of coming apart now. I don't think that it would be certainly to the economic benefit of both the U.S. and China to continue trading and producing all these things. But clearly the people in charge of the governments and the militaries are no longer following that advice.
I guess they're following it less than I would find ideal. We still do a massive amount of trade with China.
Still do.
I think that tariffs are basically last or don't make the list of how to enhance American military security. I think there are way better ideas for that. I can list some of them super quick. One is massive deregulation of American industrial capacity, which is insanely overregulated, massive deregulation of American energy capacity. Like, it's almost impossible to build nuclear reactors. China's building a bunch of them. This is a fucking terrible idea. We should have gone nuclear from the mid-1970s.
I am 100% on the same page with that one.
This is like adult,
inarguable.
Adult speak, right? Yeah. Like, if you're anti-nuclear, you just don't know enough science.
That's
how I think. It's like treating, you know, like young earth creationists with like a serious intellectual, like it's just not necessary. all due respect, maybe I'm wrong, but unlikely. And so there's a lot of stuff like that, liberating American markets. China does a lot of stuff really badly. It does most of its stuff really badly. I mean, Xi and his Council of Economic Advisors literally craft economic policy, sometimes day to day. They have all these 5-year time horizons. It's like it was a really good explanation of how not to run an economy. Like if China just took Taiwan's laws on economics and just accepted it. As a matter of fact, if they just let the Taiwanese government run China, China would, in 10 years, blast way past the US and per capita everything. It would just be fucking total dominance. Because capitalism just beats communism every time. Any version of that beats it every time. And so I think another thing is like selecting various military industries and making sure they are very well taken care of, maybe not subsidized, but like significantly less taxed. That would be amazing. Mm. And then you could have incredibly like secure military industry, incredibly secure natural resources, and incredibly secure energy infrastructure in the United States without doing a single tariff. And the net benefit would be massive for everyone involved and not like really hurting most people, but sort of low-key helping a little mini industry. I'd say that. I'll also say like, you know, not that you asked, but I think standing up to China is a really big deal. And I think grotesque military intimidation of China is necessary because Xi and his ilk, they're very evil people. They're very bad people. This is kind of a fucking neo-Hitler if you think about it. And he's accidentally keeping the standard of living of China incredibly low. Most of the villages and things like that in China live at third world levels. The average Chinese person has 1/3 of the yearly income of the average Taiwanese person. These are genetically functionally identical people who live functionally just a little bit of a water's hop away. And so China's ambition is also like, to upgrade their military substantially and control more and more of the world around them and of the world. We do not want to live in a Chinese-controlled world. We do want to live in a world in which free Europe, free Asia, and the United States and Canada have a large degree of control, just because they cause better outcomes, more social liberty, of which Chinese have, I mean, I don't know, social freedom in China is very high until the government decides you said something they don't like and then you disappear. And so economic freedom, social freedom, I just think like this is a legit one of those USSR versus USA things, or Europe and USA versus USSR. It is a very clear bad guy and a very clear much better person, which is the free countries of the world. And I think that, you know, we should have a military expansion that really signals to China, like, try it. Try fuck with Taiwan and we'll put you down fucking hard. And right now we can, absolutely. The US is way ahead of China in the military respect. Right. And I think that should continue and even expand. Mm. And hopefully the Chinese people, this is where I get real speculative. The Chinese are not into rebellion and I don't know how the hell they're gonna oust the government or anything like that. Tiananmen Square was not a success.
Have you come across this proposal? This, I think it's a Peter Thiel proposal for the enhanced games.
Yeah, oh yeah.
This is like the Olympics with, you can use whatever performance enhancing drugs that you like. Yeah. What are your thoughts on this?
It's amazing, I think it's great. I think it's awesome to have an enhanced games and a very strictly drug controlled games, just so you can have both, you know? Cause like, why not? Diversity is the spice of life. And I think lots of people wanna see what real freaks can do when they're really unhinged. Mm. And lots of people want to see good, clean, drug-free sport. I think there's no reason to not have both. Bodybuilding and powerlifting both currently have federations that are tested and untested. Sometimes in the same federation, you'll have a tested branch and an untested branch. And it's just like more fun for everyone, I think. So I think the enhanced games is really awesome. Here's another thing about the enhanced games that's kind of a secondary benefit that I think is really wonderful. If you have an enhanced games that has more and more sports every time it's run, and the purse for the sports is very high, good sponsorships, lots of prize money, so on and so forth, lots of social prestige from winning the enhanced games, what that's going to do is it's going to lower the incentive for people to cheat in the non-enhanced games. Because right now, if you go to the Olympics in anything, you know damn well that the Chinese, the Iranians, Russians, they just cheat every single fucking second that they can at everything. It's pretty much culture over there. I'm from Russia. Gaming the system is like number one. And so, and to them, they're representing national glory and like, there's no rules in that. And so as an athlete from the UK or from the Americas, from Australia, from Canada, where generally drugs are just very, very low scope in the Olympic sports, you're like, well, shit, I'm going to a gunfight with a knife. If you have tons of prestige and tons of money in untested sport or in enhanced games, then all of a sudden you have two things. One, many athletes will be like, well, I could either cheat and do the drug-free version, but why? I could just take all the drugs I want and go compete against these other guys and this would be great. And the other thing is you can institute way harsher bans on drug-free athletes getting popped than you could for anything else. So for example, there's one Olympics currently. If you get popped at one of the Olympics for drugs, many ethicists consider it pretty unfair to say you get a lifetime ban for your first exposure. Mm. They'll say, you did a bad thing, come back in 4 years. A 2 year ban from competition, 1 year probationary period, whatever, it varies. And then you come back and all's well that ends well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's also a kind of whack-a-mole approach where it's every year they have a new list of stuff.
100%.
So you kind of just go over one column and be like, well, this isn't illegal yet, so I can take all of these.
Oh yeah,
and then next year that stuff is illegal, so you have to go a column further
and so on. Of course,
yeah.
And so if you have that situation where you have one category and everyone's competing in it, the way you leverage justice has to be graded. It's your first offense. How much of a performance enhancer in this drug? Have you been around other people who have been busted before? Has your team been busted before? And then the penalties scale. But if you have a totally legitimate untested or tested, but for all the good drugs that you get to take, enhanced games, then the first time you get popped for anything at the regular games, they're just like, hey, lifetime ban for you. The third time this happens to Team UK or Team USA, all of Team USA in track and field, whatever the sport is banned for 20 years from the regular Olympics. But you don't have to end your career. You could just compete with the enhanced people.
Right.
There's also like a funny quip about it. You can say like, oh, you want to do drugs? We got right the place for you. You're not getting kicked out of sport. There's no injustice in this. It's tough to just completely end someone's career because they made a bad choice. But if you know you have this enhanced division, all of a sudden it's a much easier choice. It's like having two countries with just slightly different laws, and they're both amazing places to live, and they have tons of immigration and parity. And you break a law in one country, they go, you can't live here anymore, but you can live in this other amazing country. You just get the fuck out of here. Versus like, you just go to prison forever because there is no alternative way to live. So currently, if you get popped as a drug-using athlete in the regular Olympics, you go to prison, but it's like a real shit, like local jail where they let you out right after and you just go commit more crimes. If we had an enhanced games that was very kind of intense, it would be just morally much easier to be like, hey, I like that. You're just done drug-free because clearly you don't want to play that game. Now you can forever play your sport and be the best by taking drugs, just like you demonstrated that you want to.
And when we're talking about something like enhanced games, it's kind of hypothetical, you know, use whatever performance enhancing drugs you want. To what degree does genetics play a role in your performance then? Like, what is the breakdown? Is it 80-20? Is it 50-50 between someone who's given a good roll of the dice for, you know, genetics, they can put on a lot of muscle, versus they've got a really dialed in program with all these different compounds?
For the average sport, 95-5 in favor of genetics, maybe 90-10. For some sports, the doping helps more. Weightlifting in the Olympics, doping would help more because muscle mass is really coveted and genetics only go so far. But for many sports, like imagine women's beach volleyball. If you take all the drugs in the world, how much better are you going to be at women's beach volleyball? Some, not a ton. And so genetics still rules as the just absolute king in that space. Most of the people who are the best at their sport drug-free would beat almost every drug-using person at that sport as well. Mm. And no drugs in the world is going to allow me to be a respectable gymnast, despite my yearnings for such a fate. So yeah, drugs are now, yeah, so I would say that's probably my best answer is it's mostly genetics anyway that's still being kind of what allows you to win. Genetics plus, you know, years of dedication to the craft and things like that. Yeah.
Ayn Rand grips the political imagination. It's very, especially for young people who read it, it's like they feel like they've rediscovered the world. Mm. What you get into after that is usually people fall into different economic camps, right? They get through Ayn Rand, they get introduced to libertarian ideas, and then they pick a few choice guys. Do you have certain economists or philosophers, libertarian theorists that you resonated with afterwards?
That I resonated with afterwards? Hayek, Friedman, Cannon, I consider that. Rothbard, tons of that shit. Mm. Every now and again, I post something political and someone's like, you should read Rothbard. I'm like, yes, I am 40, so I've read other things. I'd just being a dick. But and then I got to having a one-way love affair, a parasocial love affair with Thomas Sowell.
Yes, who, I was going to ask you about him.
Is like maybe one of the most rhetorically gifted humans of all time. Mm. And smart to a degree that will humble you if you really read his deeper shit. And I eventually made my way all the way through twice his book, Knowledge and Decisions, which is way more technical than most people should be reading. I think most people, and I literally mean maybe most people, if they find some time, could read like at least a ChatGPT summary of his book, Basic Economics, and then his book, Economic Facts and Fallacies. I think those two books together, even just Basic Economics by itself, I read Basic Economics three times, and I was blown away by how much just rife economic fallacy exists in most political discussion and most political action. If it turns out we've really studied these things well, we really know about them well, just to put a fine point on it, like the Trump's tariffs, right? Hmm. Tariffs are nearly categorically a bad idea, period, no matter where you analyze from. I think we're still doing them. It's kind of sad, you know? And so Thomas Sowell, huge, huge influential figure for me. I don't agree with all of his opinions. I don't think I agree with all of anyone's opinions, really, but just an absolutely wonderful ability to phrase what would otherwise be esoteric and complicated economic ideas in ways that just fucking make sense. And I'll say another thing that'll probably get me canceled. Black people are so fucking good at making shit real as fuck. And it's just, I think he's got that thing, man. He could have been a fucking amazing rapper in his other life, you know what I mean? But on a serious note, like, you get esoteric bullshit from a lot of people. And in my not so many years on this earth, black people just have an ability to just fucking right to the chase, be like, isn't this the thing we're talking about? And Thomas Sowell has that mega gift.
Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.